The Hard Shoulder on Newstalk.
With Nissan Subscribe and Drive. No deposit, no compromise, no fuss. Find out more at nissan.ie.
Anyone who has ever lived in a different country knows the terrible feeling of homesickness, the longing to return. Well, my next guest felt it back in 1965 when he was in Australia for work, over 9,000 miles away from his native Wales. But without the funds for airfare, he had to come up with an alternative method of transport home. Brian Robson joins me now. Brian, what was that alternative method?
I actually air freighted myself, with some help, I may say, from Melbourne. The initial idea was from Melbourne to London. Didn't get that far, but we tried.
All right. Well, listen, we'll talk in a moment about how far you got. Maybe a bit of the backstory. Why were you in Australia?
As a youth, I was very adventurous, and the Australian government the Australian government in particular, were offering £10 assisted passages to people that wanted to settle there. Then the Victorian Railways actually joined them and were offering jobs with the Victorian Railways in Melbourne to any immigrant that wanted to go. Being adventurous, I didn't really give it too much thought, but I decided I wanted to try it.
So you found yourself out in Australia on the back of this incentive. How long were you there before you began to think, maybe this isn't for me?
Quite seriously, a couple of hours. the first day I arrived, believe it or not, phoned the British consulate in Melbourne and told them I'd made a mistake and I wanted to go home. The whole concept of it all was the Victorian Railways, because when we arrived, it was nothing like, well, anybody was expecting, quite honestly. I mean, we were put up in a hostel. Well, they called it a hostel. It was a terrible place, rat infested. And so any ideas that we had of settling down there disappeared immediately. Once you get in that frame of mind, it's very difficult to change it.
Okay, so very quickly you realised, right, this isn't for me. Had you no money to get home? Was that the issue?
Oh, I wish it was that simple. The problem is that you'd already signed a document agreeing to stay in Australia for 2 years. Ah. And you didn't have a passport. You see, they gave you an ID card in those days to travel one way. And so there was no passport. To go back, I would have had to pay the Australian government their expenses for taking me over, plus my fare back. To give you an example of that, my salary at the time was about £30 a month. The cost of getting back and paying my fare over, about £800.
Wow. Okay. So there was no question whatsoever of you paying to get back. Where did you get the idea then that it would make sense to air freight your way home?
John Paul and I we went to a British exhibition in Melbourne. And there was a sign up there and it actually said Pickford's Removals. We move you anywhere throughout the world. I knew the Pickford's company because they had a small depot at the bottom of my street here in Cardiff. And I thought, well, perhaps they could move me. And I really, it was a joke at first. And the more I thought about it, I thought, well, if they can air freight stuff, so can I. And that's really how it came around. And then I couldn't get it out of my mind. And I went to Qantas offices in Melbourne and made a few inquiries to see whether it would be possible for a company to send, I think it was supposed to be a mainframe computer, from Melbourne back to London, cash on delivery, so that they whoever collected it would pay on arrival. And they said yes, and then they quoted me the various rules that would be involved and so on. Then I went back to the hostel, and I remember saying to them, I'm going home. I think it went something along the lines of, how are you going to get there? You come into money or something? And I said, no, I'm going to post myself. And I think Paul, being the comedian, said something along the lines, well, look, I'll pop out and buy the postage stamps.
you mentioned John and Paul there, Brian, a couple of times. Who were John and Paul?
I was living in Australia for about 7 or 8 months. And I bumped into Paul. And I immediately recognized his beautiful Irish accent. He said, come in the room and meet John, his friend. So I went into the their room, and I suppose it's true to say we became instant friends, basically.
So these were your two mates out in Australia, these two Irish characters, John and Paul. We'll come back to them in a moment and this search for John and Paul and to get back in touch with them since. When you got to the point of posting you home, I can't believe I'm asking this as a serious question, when you got to the point of posting you to London from Melbourne, how did you do it? Had you a crate? Was there holes in it? Did you have food and water? What were the practicalities?
The practicalities were actually not particularly well thought out by us. I must say it was... Then I went out and I managed to buy a crate, a wooden crate, and I had it delivered to a piece of open land behind the bedsitter I was actually living in. And then we started to put the plan together. And I suppose it took about a month before we actually sent it. And I always remember John and Paul nailing the lid on it, me sitting in it, of course. John and Paul nailing the lid on, and I remember them banging the box and saying, good luck, Bri, and that was it. I was on my way.
And what did you have in the box with you?
My suitcase, because my suitcase had every possession I owned at the time in it. So I had my suitcase, I had a pillow to make it a little bit easier on my back whilst in there, because, of course, I was sitting with my knees up in my chest. I had an empty bottle for obvious reasons, perhaps, and I had a full bottle of water, maybe about a litre of water.
Wow. Okay. So not a huge amount with you. What happened then, Andrew? Things, you said it at the start, things maybe didn't go quite as planned. What happened?
I was picked up by what they call a taxi truck, which is a taxi that collects freight and so on, and they took me to Melbourne Airport. When we got to the airport, they turned the thing upside down, the crate upside down, although it was amply marked this side up, and they turned it upside down. And so I spent quite a long time standing on my head, or sitting on my head would be a better term perhaps. I flew from Melbourne to Sydney, but the first one was a propeller plane, and it was terribly noisy, and of course everything happened in complete darkness. As soon as they closed the hold up, you couldn't see anything. You were just in complete darkness on your own. It was quite frightening, actually, to be honest.
I'm sure it was. It must have been terrifying, particularly when it flipped upside down. What happened next? Why did you not get to London?
When we got to Sydney, I was supposed to be going on a Qantas aeroplane, which we'd booked, to London, which would have taken 36 hours. Unfortunately, for some reason, and the belief is that the aircraft was full, they let me wait 24 hours at Sydney, and they put me on a Pan American aeroplane, which I didn't know, of course, didn't know about. And of course, that went via the States and stopped at every conceivable airport between Sydney and Los Angeles. I didn't know I was off route. I didn't know where I was. And you become completely disassociated with the whole thing. You're not sure whether it's happening or whether you're dreaming it, or you're not sure. Sometimes you even think you're dead. I mean, it sounds crazy to say it, but you think, maybe I'm dead. Maybe this is not happening. So it was one terrific shambles going through my mind, to say the least.
Yeah, I'm sure it was. Like, was there a sense of relief, you know, when you finally got out of that box? What was it like?
No, actually, it was quite the opposite in a way.
Wow.
Well, I suppose there was relief a little bit there, but I didn't know where I was. I thought I was in London at first. And when they got me out of the box, out of the crate, it was only then really that I found out I was in the States. And of course, I couldn't talk, I couldn't move, I couldn't None of my muscles would work. There must have been somewhere between 20 and 40 people around, including FBI and CIA, and they took me to Los Angeles Central Receiving Hospital in an ambulance, and then slowly I started to make a recovery from there. But at first it was frightening from the point of view that I thought, now I've done it, you know, now I've done something I shouldn't have for sure. So it was not a very nice feeling, to be honest.
No, I can imagine not. And listen, it is remarkable that we've gone this long, this amount of time has passed since, and it hasn't been made into a movie or a book before now. I know you're after writing it, The Great Escape, and I understand a movie is possibly in the works. But John and Paul, you've never been in contact with them since, is that right?
That's correct. The Crate Escape is out at the end of this month. John and Paul and I said goodbye when they tapped that crate and wished me good luck. I think just before then they said, "You sure you're going to do this?" And yes. And then the last nail went in and good luck. And that was the last time I spoke to them. But we'd had an agreement that none of us would disclose that the other was involved. For our own safety, because we didn't know whether we were breaking the law or not. We had no idea. And when I was caught, I didn't want to get them into trouble. So I refused to give names. At the time, I knew the names. But that was 50 odd years ago, 55, 56 years ago or something. So it was sort of difficult. Well, about a month after I was back in the UK, I sent a letter to the last known address and I didn't get a reply. And I don't think that was because they didn't want to. I think they probably didn't receive it because we were quite good friends. Mm. And I tried a couple of times after that as well, but there was no contact.
Yeah. Well, listen, what is it? 56 years have passed. Paul or John, maybe they're here in Ireland, maybe they're in Australia, maybe they've got relatives listening and they know the part of the story that they played. If they want to get in touch, how can they do it, Brian?
Well, they can contact me via email, and I'm quite happy to give my email address out. It's Brian, with an I, P for Peter, M for Michael, S for Sugar, @hotmail.com. And I can assure both Paul and John, if they do contact me and they still want to be kept secret, don't worry, I won't tell anybody.
Okay. Well, listen, if anyone knows anything about Paul or John and they can help Brian out, if Paul or John are listening and you want to get in touch, Brian, B-R-I-A-N, Brian, P-M-S, @hotmail.com. Brian, it's been a pleasure to speak to you.
And the same here. Thank you very much for having me.
Yeah, Brian Robson, whose book comes out, as he said, later this month, The Crate Escape.